Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
You're listening to NPR News. I'm Angela Davis. This morning, we're spending some time talking about two growing industries in Minnesota, the production of wine and the production of spirits like gin, vodka, bourbon, and brandy. Yep, wine from Minnesota-grown grapes and hard alcohol made at Minnesota distilleries from ingredients like wheat, corn, and barley grown right here in our state. While you were out at the state fair last month, did you happen to walk by the Minnesota Wine Building or the exhibit space of the Minnesota Distillers Guild? More and more people are getting into the business of booze in our state and finding success. Winemakers and distilleries are winning national awards for the excellence of their products. So today, we are talking with two people who are closely watching what is happening with wine and spirits here and the people who are making them. What do they think about the quality of the wine and hard liquor that is being produced in Minnesota and what is on the horizon? Grab a cup of coffee, join our conversation. If you have a question or some feedback to share, the number to call this hour is 651-227-6000, or you can certainly tweet me. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Let me introduce my guests who are here in the studio with me. Leslie Miller is here. She is a certified sommelier. She is the sole owner of the wine consulting firm Amuse, and co-founder of the National Wine Club, Sip Better. She also was recently a judge at the Minnesota Grape Growers Association's 11th Annual International Cold Climate Wine Competition. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
We also have with us Joy Summers. She is here in the studio with us. She is the editor of Eater Minneapolis, where she covers all things food and drink. Hi, Joy.
Hi.
Thank you for not having so many words that I struggle to pronounce. Well, first, I want to know, do you still find that some people are surprised to learn that Minnesota is making its own wine and spirits and we're getting pretty good at it?
Absolutely.
Conversations, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm constantly still running into people across the state, certainly across the country, that have no idea the breeding program that we have here or the number of wineries that we have in the state. Or people that have actually never tried the grapes that are here or really kind of gotten into the world of the wines that we produce overall.
Right, because when you think of wine, you think, or the grapes that produce wine, you think of warm climates, so California or places in Europe, not a cold climate place.
There's cooler climates, certainly, and some warmer climates, but temperatures that get below 30 degrees right. zero is obviously a very chilly climate. Mm-hmm. And so those grapes were distinctly designed for growing in this particular climate. So many of the grapes that were produced at the University of Minnesota can actually survive upwards of 33 degrees below zero.
Wow.
Which is very, very impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
And Joy, when you talk to folks, is it mm-hmm. still a new phenomenon to folks that, oh my gosh, I'm looking at this label. This was bottled and made right here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Does that surprise people?
I feel like we started out with very tiny shelf space of these like novelty spirits where all of a sudden we can get vodka that's legally made locally. We can buy it. And now we've really expanded all different kinds of products. We're able to get really cool, interesting things on the shelves, stuff you couldn't find anywhere else that's only being made in Minnesota, and we're getting these great cocktail rooms that are going with these distilleries. We're really creating, in addition to an industry, a whole culture of getting together and drinking these things that are made from Minnesota grains. Some of these distillers are farmers themselves. They're going mm-hmm. out, they're growing, they're seeing this product all the way through. So when we're talking about like eating local, drinking local is now the thing. And it's been this burgeoning industry. I feel like we're really on the precipice of an exciting time.
And did I name them all, the types of liquor? I said gin, vodka, bourbon and brandy. Did I leave out anything?
Oh, there's so much more. There's people making Fernet. There's other digestive sippers. There's Amaros.
Liqueurs.
There's a whole range of different flavored liqueurs out there. It's really kind of gotten to be representative of all of the things that you want to buy in the liquor store. You can basically source somewhere.
And they're starting to be sold beyond Minnesota, but in other states as well?
Yes, it's really expanding, not just regionally, but someplace like, say, Tattersall has gotten the ability to. I've found their products as far south as New Orleans. I have a bartender friend down there, walked into his house and saw Tattersall on his bar, and he was so excited about the product and had no idea it was made here. And they're also trying to expand west. We're trying to get out there. We're making really cool products, and it's neat to see people getting to share it. But I don't think outside of here people have any idea that we're doing this in Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to look into the history of how all of this really got started. I think there's a lot of knowledge with the craft breweries, the people who drink beer. We're very aware that we have all of these craft breweries that are opening and doing well. But with Minnesota wine, Leslie, let's talk a little bit more about these grapes that have been developed to withstand the cold climate. And I know that the University of Minnesota, the researchers there, have been very involved with this going back to the late 70s, early
80s. That's right.
So what's the history there?
So the 70s was really kind of that time where people were, you know, starting to think about breeding. And I feel like it was the pop of the 90s, the breeding program at the U, you know, with one of the very first grapes that they introduced, Frontenac, in 1996. Suddenly, they were basically building grapes that were more disease-resistant, cold-resistant, very hardy for the climate, the culture, and also producing flavors, palates, profiles that were matching other French, European grapes that I think people could sort of relate to. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you did drink something like Pinot Noir, all of a sudden Frontenac was there, and you can liken some of the flavors. So it was in the 90s, I feel, is when really people started developing, when the U was really kind of popping some of these brand new grapes, and then people were suddenly planting them.
So where is the U, or where was the U? Where were they growing these vines? On the campus at the U in St. Paul, or where were they growing?
So the horticultural site, actually, we can thank the apple people.
The apple growers.
I mean, everything that they're doing out at the Horticultural Center around the breeding program around apples. I mean, think about all of the information education that we've spent, you know, putting into the apple breeding program. Same area where they're growing actually all these grapes.
So is this in St. Paul, the St. Paul campus, or is it across the state?
This is actually out by out in Chanhassen, is it?
Okay.
Or Chaska.
By the Arboretum?
Chanhassen,
right? Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So they're using the land that where the apple trees, where they were doing the research on those.
Right, exactly. Right. And it's mesmerizing to see all of the plants and the grapes that they've actually, you know, produced, and everything has a tag on it.
And it's a lot. I read that today there are more than 12,000 experimental vines cultivated on 12 acres. So they're looking at some of the popular varieties of grapes in other countries, other places, and they've been able to sort of create like their Minnesota cousins, so to speak.
Kind of in their own way. I mean, they're really kind of starting from scratch, right? To say, let's just look at these plants and see what actually grows, can survive these climates. Move them around the state and also see what can survive in different soil prototypes, and then the flavors of those grapes, what will be produced from a year that was cooler or a year that was warmer. And I think that's a fascinating part. That's the reason why it takes so long to come up with a new grape.
Now, I told you I've visited a couple of the vineyards and tried some of the Minnesota wines, but it's been probably 10, 15 years since I've done that,
right.
Which would kind of align like right before I had kids. And so have things changed? Are we finding that the quality of the wine is improving?
Absolutely. 100%. Each year, I'm so proud. I sit on the cold climate competition board where we literally judge over 300 wines in one day. And they come from all of the cooler climates around us that are producing only from cold, hardy grapes. And each year we see the improvement. Obviously, also, I think with education, knowledge of growers also just getting together. I feel like people are able to kind of get through some of the issues that they maybe had in the past. Mm-hmm. They have more information about their land, about the seasons, about the grape itself. And then I also think that winemaking techniques have also improved. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a horticultural educational center. We don't necessarily have a winemaking school here in Minnesota. And I feel like that would be sort of the next level for us to have a winemaking school.
As time goes by, just as the vines, I guess, age, does that help improve the quality of grapes too? I guess
absolutely.
As they mature.
Yes. Right. Obviously, with age, you get more structure in wine. You get more, you know, flavors that are really intense, integrated kind of throughout. Now, that doesn't mean that you really do have to take care of your vines still, because we know that the temperatures can still get well below 33 degrees below zero, right?
What do they do with them in the wintertime? Do they cover them? Do they bring them in? Or what happens across the extreme cold?
So they can bury them. And they can actually just literally protect them from some of the chilly temperatures. You know, pulling them up and replanting them in the spring would be very difficult. But they do bury them. They lay them down to try to be able to literally cover them in the wintertime.
And Joy, I know your specialty really is the distilleries and the hard stuff. But what are your impressions of Minnesota wine? Because I'm sure in writing for Eater, you guys have covered wine.
I was nodding my head emphatically about the improvement. It's something feels like when I was first aware of tasting Minnesota wines, which was probably about last time you were out there, also before I had kids, the way it has matured has been delightful to taste that journey. I feel like we went from really leaning heavily into sweet wines, and there's still a place for a good ice wine. But
What's the difference between a sweet wine and an ice wine?
A sweet wine is actually a wine that's, I mean, you can make a number of different styles of sweet wine just in general. And an ice wine is very distinct that it must be frozen under certain temperatures. Mm-hmm. So the grape itself is frozen and then it's brought into the winery at a distinct temperature. And then the grapes are fermented, frozen. So they hang on the vines much, much longer to condense literally the sugar in the grape. And then they have to be naturally frozen. We do make an ice box wine, what we call in California, where they actually go out into the vineyard and spray cold water so they freeze
on
the grapes.
That's kind of cute.
But,
we call that October.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cute what they're doing.
But Canada and Germany, you know, they were the people that really did it, you know, instead of ice box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's something like that I think of as a dessert wine. That's something that pairs really well with like a nice Bundt pound cake or something. But now we're getting some really sophisticated glasses that I have poured at dinner parties and been proud to serve. I love I don't want to say sophistication because it sounds like I might be degrading what it used to be, but it's definitely we've achieved a different depth of flavor in our local wines.
Absolutely. And I have actually put the Minnesota wines in lineups in blind tastings with other quote-unquote wine professionals.
So blind tasting means just that it's not labeled
It's not labeled. I literally just put a number of different white wines in a glass. And wine professionals have picked out the Minnesota wines as being European, being Alsatian from France, being Germanic, being from Washington State. So when people, you know, are thinking about some of these wines, you know, they're not necessarily, they think that they're going to be so wildly different. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're very much, you know, some of the whites are really have been shining stars too as of late.
And by that second or third glass, it just keeps tasting better, right?
But they are. I mean, also, you know, at the Minnesota State Fair, I pair, you know, all the Minnesota wines to everything out there. Mm-hmm. But it's really true. I mean, when you're sitting down to a holiday dinner or you're sitting down to a gathering of a dinner party, I mean, you can pair these grapes from anything to, you know, brats on the grill to roasted turkey to, you know, pan-roasted fish to all kinds of great things.
So let's talk about what's happened with distilleries. So I think it was about 7 years ago, around 2011, we saw a change in state law that allowed many more distilleries to open. So what happened to create all of a sudden, let's open a distillery and start making vodka?
There was a a shift in how you could get licensing. It went from being this incredibly cost prohibitive thing where you really had to have a big company and a ton of money behind it to do all of the permitting. And it was incredibly expensive. I think I heard that the license alone went from being $10,000 down to $1,000. So all of a sudden that opened up the door. At the same time, we'd had the craft cocktail movement where these people had gone deep nerd on making drinks and had really...
What is deep nerd on making a drink?
Well, they kind of took all the elements apart and put them back together again in new ways. Mm-hmm. Like that was, I think, how we got that everyone has to have an old fashioned on the menu now. To mm-hmm. go back to it, the old fashioned was named because it was the first cocktail ever created. You took way back in the Wild West days, terrible whiskey, and tried to make it palatable by throwing some sugar in there. And then when in Manhattan, they change it by adding sweet vermouth to it. And all of a sudden you get the Manhattan. What do you call the other drink? Well, it's the old fashioned. So that's how that began. So it was interesting to see that drink come back on the menus with such the force that it has now.
Like it's everywhere.
Everybody's mm-hmm. got it. Why are we so excited about taking something that's been around for so long and making it new? Well, it's coming up with different bourbons, different types of simple syrup, the bitters that they're using. Everybody took the elements apart and then reassembled them. And I think the people who were really into the craft cocktail movement, who had been reading all about the cocktails that were pre-prohibition, understanding the flavor elements in them, once you've learned how to do every kind of bitters in your home tinkering kitchen, what do you do next? So take somebody like Dan Oskey, who's co-owner of Tattersall Distilling. He was a really well-known bartender. He was at the forefront of that craft cocktail movement. I would sit at his bar and talk to him about all of the beakers and tubes and things he had simmering away in his home apartment kitchen. It makes sense that once he had access to be able
to open a distillery,
to try right. distilling his own spirits, that was the next frontier. So he figured out how to recreate all of the things that go into the glass except what's behind the bar. Let's recreate the bar.
And so it takes off.
It takes off, and it starts out, we've got a few hardy souls making a bunch of vodka, because vodka can be made young. You don't have to age it. You distill it and it's ready to pour. That and gin, which is the same base spirit, but you can add in botanicals at different levels of the distilling process. And that's how you get those different distinctive gin flavors.
So help me with where vodka comes from. Is it potatoes?
Vodka is the kind of thing that could be made from a lot of different sources. It can be made from grain. It can be basically, it's the most basic distilled. Mm-hmm. So you can make it with corn. Mm-hmm. Basically anything you're kicking around the house, you can.
Grapes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Ciroc is made from grapes, yeah.
Yeah.
And what about gin?
And gin also can be made from a lot of those same base grain spirits. But then if you look at a still, it's this, the professional ones are a big copper pot with this huge, tall neck that reaches mm-hmm. up to the sky. And at different levels up that neck, you can add in different botanicals. And the way that the still processes it, it evaporates that up and then condenses back down again, pulls in different layers of those flavors and
So this gets its start about 7-8 years ago. And I read that there are now about 40 micro distilleries across the state.
Yeah, they're all over. And what's really cool is seeing it happen in all of the regional pockets. Like one of the best local bourbons, I would say, is Rock Creek or Rock Filter. Oh, no, I'm messing up their name. Rock Creek Filter down in the Driftless region of the state, down in the south eastern part mm-hmm. of the. So gorgeous, fertile farmland. It's veteran owned, and he's also a farmer. So he is out there growing the grains, the wheat, the rye that's being turned into the mash, and then distilling it into this beautiful spirit and aging it in barrels there.
And so you're writing about food and drinks. Mm-hmm. What are your impressions of these Minnesota-made vodkas, gins, whiskeys? How do they compare to some of the stuff that people have been drinking for decades?
Well, I think like anything, Some of them are phenomenal, fun to discover flavors. I thought I didn't like gin. And then I was introduced to Solvig Gin out of Far North Spirits, which is way up in Halleck, Minnesota. Their gin is meant to taste like their farm fields after a summer rain.
Now, how do you get that in a bottle?
It is. I don't know, but it works. It's very vernal tasting. It tastes
what
like...
What does that mean?
Summery. Mm-hmm. It tastes like blossoms. It tastes... There's a floral element on the nose that kind of translates through to the palate. It's like breathing in fresh, clean air with a hint of wildflowers.
So is there a hint of wildflowers in it? I mean, it's, yes. What's the botanical that creates that?
There, I don't know specifically. I don't know if there...
What's the term I'm looking at? Is it infused or it's something different? But when you add other ingredients to change the flavor.
Leading the botanicals in there. It's mm-hmm. part of the distillation.
Wow.
Process of the spirit.
I'm getting a history lesson or a science lesson.
I know, we need to get arrested here.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about wines made in Minnesota from grapes grown in Minnesota. We're talking about Minnesota distilleries. So many of them have opened and mm-hmm. the quality of the gin, the vodka, the mm-hmm. bourbon, the brandy, and people are writing to me. And it's other stuff, Angela, too. I don't know all the stuff people drink. But all the hard alcohol mm-hmm. and the liqueurs, how do you say it?
Yep, liqueurs.
Liqueurs to flavor them, how it's improving and how it's growing and getting attention. If you have a locally produced wine or spirit that you would like to talk about and share with, give us a call. The number is 651-227-6000. You can also leave me a message on Twitter that you can find me at Angela Davis MPR. And Joy, I asked you about Minnesota mm-hmm. wine. Leslie, let me ask you about the spirits. So you're a wine expert.
Right.
What were your impressions, you know, a few years ago when you started trying, or I'm assuming maybe you tried some
Absolutely.
Of these hard liquors. What do you think?
I love the improvement of the scene just overall. And I totally agree with Joy. It's so exciting to see the Distillers Guild, you know, just the same thing as the Beer Guild has improved, the Cider Guild that's popped up. I love the education and excitement around it just in general and the improvement of it. And I also think it's just a beautiful way to kind of just bring community together. Let's taste the products that we're making in our own backyard. Let's talk about the farmers that are growing the grains, the mm-hmm. same way that somebody... like the Shells group, you know, they've been talking about the grains that make their beers. Let's talk about the distillers that are growing things on their properties. And then also the really fun botanicals and, you know, different pieces and flavors and evoking, you know, a feeling or, you know, all the things that we've been talking about in the wine world for so long. Let's stand on this piece of property and breathe in the soil and all those smells and flavors that come through that particular environment, soil prototype. You can really always taste that in wine. And it's really fun to see that, I think, very distinctly of Minnesota products.
So how do the owners of distilleries connect with the farmers? Like, if you're not a farmer and, you know, but you want to use these products, or how do you find a place, or like, how does that come together? Where do they shop?
I think with anything, you make connections with people in your community and you look for like people who are dedicated to doing local growing. You reach out to a local farmers organization. You reach out to people you know who work in farms. For some of these guys who came out of restaurants, they already have farm connections through farm-to-table movement. It's just kind of taking that and expanding it. Or, like a few of them, they're farming it and growing them themselves. In fact, mentioning Far North Spirits, they got into it because of their family's rye farm, knowing that it would make amazing whiskey, and started out like with that gin because it was young. They didn't have to age it. Now they've been aging it. They have a Rocknar rye, which is one of my favorites for making.
Stunning.
Oh, it's stunning. So
what is it again?
Good. Rocknar rye.
Okay.
And it is locally made aged rye whiskey. And any kind of a whiskey cocktail you want to make, you can buy this and use it in there. And it is a beautiful, spicy element. It's really fun. Like, I would definitely say put that on your bar for fall drinking right now.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. And we want to hear from you. The number to call is 651-227-6000. You can leave me a message on Twitter as well. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. If you have a favorite Minnesota wine, if you have a favorite gin or vodka or bourbon or brandy that you want other people to know about that you've consumed and endorse, leave me a message on Twitter so I can tell people about it or give me a call. Right now, we have a lot of folks who work in or work for or work with distilleries who want to join the conversation. We've got Gina Holman on the line. She's with J. Carver Distillery. Good morning, Gina.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. And you're also, you work as an officer of the Minnesota Distillers Guild, which kind of helps try to market and let people know about the distilleries across the state of Minnesota.
Correct. So with that, I want to say thank you to Joy and Leslie and you for really promoting and highlighting the fabulous things that are happening in Minnesota. So I'm really grateful on behalf of the Minnesota Distillers Guild for that promotion. What I love the conversation that you're having. What's really exciting is the distilleries that are in the cities. So many people love going to those tap rooms. I'd love to invite everybody to also go out to a lot of the distilleries that are in Faribault and Northfield. We are in Waconia, and we're very fortunate to have three wineries, J. Carver Distillery, and two breweries right in our own backyard. And so whether it's visiting Duluth and going to see Joel and Emily and Vikra or coming out to J. Carver, it's really highlighting the fact that a lot of us are not just making vodka and gin, but we also make apple brandy with local apples from Spotsil's American Harvest in Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And then beautifully, we enjoy, I know you love this one with the Sazeracs, we have an absinthe that is really unique. It's based off of our Marquette Grappa from the three wineries in Waconia. So Sovereign, Schramm, and Parley give us all of their pumice from the Marquette grape. We make Grappa, and then from that, I distill the absinthe. And one of the finishing botanicals uniquely is Everlasting Clover, which is alfalfa. So we get very unique as well with highlighting all of the amazing grains and botanicals, as you had stated earlier, and right here in Minnesota.
Gina, I want to ask you about your work with the Minnesota Distillers Guild, because I heard, I think in an interview, the president of the guild, Mark Schiller, talking about the legislation, the state laws that really sort of, I guess, in some ways restrict what distilleries can do in comparison to other states across the country, what we have in place in Minnesota. Are there some laws that need to change that would help you boost your business?
Well, so what's unique is with the wineries starting out, as Leslie was saying, you know, in the 70s, 80s with Alexis Bailey, and then the real brewery boom, then, of course, the next step was the distilleries. So for us, we're able to sell 375 bottles, one per person per day in our cocktail rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were out, so many of your listeners visited us at the Minnesota State Fair, and we were selling our Minnesota passports to have everybody come visit our cocktail rooms.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking for is just parity to be able to sell, you know, a 750 bottle. So not the pint size as so many people refer it to it as, a 375. What you see in liquor stores is the 750 ml bottle.
The big bottle. Well,
correct.
I think it's big.
All right. It is big.
And then having that exhibit space at the State Fair, was that helpful? Were there a lot of people who had no idea that these products were being made, that distilleries here
amazing
in our state?
Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact that we all had our grain bottles highlighted in the crates, really highlighting all of our businesses and those of us that have cocktail rooms, it was. I think it was an aha moment for a lot of the people, the whatever 2.156 million people that visited the fair. And Leslie, seeing you so many times on a lot of the media and radio stations and TV shows, you can attest to this. I think it was a really amazing way to highlight what is special about Minnesota and really getting that national recognition from the awards. I'm grateful to be with the Guild, been vice president with the Guild for over 5 years, and the marketing side of it is what Mark Schiller and our entire guild team is really trying to do, is just promote everything that's happening in Minnesota with local distilleries.
All right. Well, Gina, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Gina Holman there with J. Carver Distillery, also a vice president at the Minnesota Distillers Guild. And Joy, what do you think about having that opportunity at the fair to give people a chance to have some taste and to know, like, look at a map, like, look at all these places wherever you came in the state. There's someplace near you that's making.
It was a map. It was nice to see the grains in the bottle. I think it's just a toe dip in what it should be. I would really love a better opportunity to get to know all of these distillers because they are all over the place in our metro area, outstate. Each is unique to where they are, what they're doing. We were talking about the terroir, the water quality, like the water. I think Duluth has the best drinking water. So what they're making with their gins and spirits is...
Now, I've seen that it's at Vikra. Distillery,
yes.
Which is sold in restaurants and bars across the state.
It's all over the place.
From Duluth.
Look for their gin. If you think you hate gin, try theirs. They do different types of botanicals, so you can get something that's more punchy, juniper that you associate with gin, or something softer like a cedar, something kind of springy and more gentle for somebody like me who doesn't really want to get punched in the face by flavor.
And we talked about the wines winning awards, but the spirits, too, are mm-hmm. winning national awards. I have here it's Prairie Organic Spirits, recognized as the number one craft vodka distillery in the country by USA Today. Was that last year, 2018?
Yeah, that's impressive. They are not as small as some of our other distillers. They're part of a larger Phillips distilling organization. Mm-hmm. But also, that is great. And, like, put it on your bar and vodka to have.
J. Carver Distillery for mm-hmm. brandy, Tattersall for rum. They won national awards last year.
Yeah, it's just impressive. I think the more people start to taste what we have going on, we really have a powerhouse lineup of different flavors and experts making them. I will say that at the State Fair, it would be really nice if we had a little more opportunity to taste what is going on. So I so encourage people to go to the big box liquor stores, hang out in your liquor store when somebody's doing a tasting. These distillers are out there sampling their product because the best way to get to know it is to try it. If you're at a bar and you see something behind the bar that you would like to know more about, ask the bartender. These guys are experts.
Is that okay to do?
They know.
Yeah.
They'll give you a taste to talk about it. Yep.
Okay. I want to go back to the phone lines. Mike is listening this morning, and Mike is in Buffalo, I believe. How you doing, Mike?
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning to you. What do you want to share with us?
Well, there's a very excellent bourbon being bottled in Minneapolis by Crooked Water Spirits. Crooked Water is a women-owned distillery. And I just picked up a bottle of their Kings Point bourbon for my dad's 85th birthday.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Wow. So what do you like about the taste of the bourbon there?
What I really like is that it's a local, well-made product. I think that the micro distilleries are a natural evolution of the microbreweries, and I hope that we get more of them. And as God is my witness, I'll never drink Jim Beam again.
Oh, my. See, there's that Minnesota spirit. Do you just love the fact that, you know, you want to sort of promote your homegrown products, even if we're talking about wine and spirits? Is that some value to you, Mike?
Absolutely. Whenever I can. My dad and I are both big whiskey hounds. And whenever I can, I get him a Minnesota spirit, and I also get a bottle for myself and take it down to Iowa. And so far, I have not run out of good whiskeys to bring him.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Mike, for letting us know about Crooked Water Spirits in Minneapolis, a women-owned distillery. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, we've talked a little bit about marketing. What are some of the barriers, do you see the distilleries and the winemakers confronted with? Is it just the stereotype that, this is, you know, Kentucky is where you get your bourbon from, right? Kentucky, that's the bourbon place.
Well, bourbon is hard to just, you can't just pop out of the door and throw out some bourbon. It takes a long aging process. That's why so many distillers started doing vodka and gin right away, because you could just make it and sell it. Bourbon, you have to put in a barrel, put it in the back, and take care of it and wait.
So have there been enough years now have passed? It's been about 7 years?
We're dancing up on the edge of it being enough years. I think 7 is still a little young. I think there are some distilleries who get some that's got a head start and then bottle it here. But I think purely locally made. It's taken a little while, but we're getting to the place where you're kind of like rubbing the edges off a little bit and smoothing it out. But there's some bracing ones that are still fun to play around with.
All right. I want to read some of these Twitter comments. So folks on Twitter are telling, okay, Jen says, don't forget about 10,000 drops in Faribault.
That's right.
That's a destination. Oh, I love the names. 10,000 drops.
Yeah.
Patrick says, don't forget about Du Nord Craft Spirits in Minneapolis. Best vodka gin, coffee liqueur, and now whiskey in Minnesota. That was one of the early ones that opened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they were the first tasting
room. Du Nord. Susan says, Garvin Heights Winery in Winona.
Absolutely.
Is a place that people should know about. And someone asked that I please talk about lesser known spirits like, am I going to pronounce this correct? Aqua V.
Let's talk about Aqua.
What is Aqua V? Spelled A-Q-U-A-V-I-T. I've seen it in writing. I just didn't know how to say it for sure.
Do you want to talk
what
about it?
What is it?
You go for it.
Is it a wine or is it a...
It is a spirit.
A spirit, okay.
And it's something that's kind of, I think, very... It's steeped in Norwegian culture. It's a nice little pun there. the most famous, I think, is a Liney Aqua V, which had been around for years and years and years, made by bottling this caraway perfumed spirit in a barrel, putting it in the bulk of a ship and driving it across the equator. So that is probably the best one known. I'm not sure exactly what does that about being in the ship sloshing back and forth. Anyway, it was a thing, and it's a really interesting spirit that is also kind of ingrained in Minnesota culture, mm-hmm. just like schnapps. It's something that grandpas usually got a bottle of and you take a little snort of. Tattersall is doing, I think, was the first one to do the Aqua V. And we've also already gotten a lot of other ones where it's more of this kind of, it's a clear one. It doesn't have to be aged. It can be made and sold right away. But you get these kind of spicy, more savory notes to the clear liquid, which makes it really fun to play with in cocktails.
Another caller I want to get to in Minneapolis, Molly is listening. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for this topic. This is a huge passion of mine. I go to local distilleries nearly every weekend, and I was so excited when I turned you on this morning.
Oh, well, I'm glad I made somebody happy today. And do you have some favorites that you want to let people know about, distilleries or winemakers?
I do. My number one is, since you've mentioned, Jake Harbor. I am a new whiskey fan, and I will never, like the other caller said, go back to Jim Beam or a bar whiskey. It's so different. It's watered down. And Jake Harbor is most rich and kind of sweet and most balanced. I mean, yeah, they're my very favorite. And my other favorite is, I don't think you mentioned, is Her Spirit Vodka.
Say the name of it again.
Her Spirit.
Her Spirit.
Vodka. Yep. And she gives 50% back of proceeds to female entrepreneurs.
Oh.
Yeah. And she just launched about year and a half ago.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful company.
And any other place that you want to share that folks should check out?
We went to Copper Wing Distillery last weekend, into their cocktail room, which is just a fun, almost romantic mm-hmm. place, and the bartenders are very knowledgeable.
Where is that? So Copper Wing. Where is that?
Copper Wing? Sure, that's in St. Louis Park.
Okay. All right. Well, Molly in Minneapolis. So we have a thank you very much for those recommendations and sharing with people. I love the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And what I also love is that the public can experience sort of the behind the scenes process, both of the vineyards as well and making the wine, but also in the distilleries. You can do tours and see how it comes together. And it's harvest season, right? As far
Absolutely.
As with the wine growers, I know there's some events that are coming up. And can you tell us about that, Leslie, how people can take tours and
have Actually, they're constantly, so if you actually just logged into, you know, looking at the Minnesota Grape Growers Association page, there's so many fun harvesty events going on, from grape stomping.
To Lucy and Ethel?
Yeah,
I Love Lucy,
absolutely.
The grape stomping?
Yeah. You know, Parley Lake does like a series. Speaking of Waconia, I mean, it really kind of is a mecca. What does Stephanie March call it? Liquid Lake area. Yeah, out there. But it is really fantastic. Breweries, distilleries, wineries, and between Schramm and Parley, I mean, they have so many things going on to celebrate the harvest season. You can pick grapes. You can foot stomp. It's really fantastic.
So September, October, that's sort of the season where we have the opportunity to,
yes,
do those things.
Yep.
And I'm visualizing the pictures I saw of the grape stomping.
It's kind of so much fun.
It's kind of surreal.
Yeah.
But with the distilleries, many of them offer tours. Like there's a section of the business where they'll let you walk through and see call them tanks, but is there a more technical term for what
tank
you can
works.
See? Is that what it is?
Distills.
The distills. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And even some of the distilleries that don't have a cocktail room, like say Sculvin Distillery, who does this amazing habanero rum that I love for a Bloody Mary, he does tours. So even the ones where you can't just go and sip nearby, you can still call and make an appointment. And they love to talk about the process. It's clear everybody who's involved in this is so passionate about what they're making.
Another one of our listeners, Craig in St. Paul, he had to hang up, but he left a message. He wants to know, how can small farmers get their products to these distillers? I'm a hobby farmer looking for a way to do this. So we talked a little bit about the connection between, you know, agriculture and these new businesses, and what seems to be the connection. Like, how do farmers discover, you know, distilleries that might be using what they're growing, and how do, you know, the owners of these distilleries discover the farms that might be able to supply them? What's the connection?
For him, we got to put him in touch with Gina. He's got to talk to the guild. I think that's absolutely...
The Minnesota Distillers Guild would have that information.
Mm-hmm. Going to have all those connections. I was saying there are several distillers who started this on farms. They are farming their own mm-hmm. grains, or they're part of these great rural communities, or they have connections to small farmers because they used to have ties to the hospitality industry and they've worked in restaurants where farm to table was already established. So now we're going grain to glass.
Mm-hmm. More recommendations from some of our listeners on Twitter. We had a fantastic time, says Rick. Fantastic time at Flying Dutchman Spirits in Eaton Prairie just a few weeks ago. And Ross writes, shout out to Ida Graves of Vodka, solely made from Minnesota honey. Wow.
Yes.
Oh,
I
fun.
Didn't talk about that.
What's going on with the honey?
Well, local honey. And that's one of those things that's it's such a great ingredient to be able to have because it changes with the season. Mm-hmm. And when you're taking great care of your bees, you're taking great care of the land. We all know that we've gone from like, oh my God, it's a bee, to oh my God, bro, are you okay? Like everybody, we're doing what we can to take care of the bees to be able to celebrate that local honey. I love that tip that they're using the local honey to distill it. You get that thread of kind of that husky sweetness that honey can impart.
Now, we know that some businesses fail for different mm-hmm. reasons. And so what seems to determine the success of a winery or distillery? Why are some doing better than others?
I think from the perspective of just being open to the public, I mean, that is massive. You know, there's so many wineries that haven't always allowed visitors to come, and they were only maybe open 1 or 2 days a week. And now you're seeing wineries across the state really being open, building tasting rooms where people can come, hang out, you know, learn about the wines, learn about the distinct grapes that we grow here. And I think the marketing aspect of things too, just as simple as Facebook or Instagram, showing what you're doing within your winery, people enjoying it, giving just little blurbs about the grapes and what they taste like. And I do feel like the people that are more current with social media, mm-hmm. more current with just having their doors open, whether it's live music on the weekend or food trucks, just to invite the public come out. It's not just, you know, drinking the spirits or, you know, drinking the wine, but it's a celebration. You know, have some food, listen to some music, enjoy, you know, wine, spirits, beers, you know, across the state, I think, at every place now.
And Joe, what have you seen as you write about, mm-hmm. you know, what people are eating and drinking? What seems to help a distillery become successful and those that have gone out of business, what happened?
Well, it's really expensive. Mm-hmm. It is a really expensive way to try to make a buck. The investment on the front end of the stills, the things that they're trying to put together, like I just wrote an article, a guide on the distilleries that I love across the state. So if anybody wants to go read that, that'd be awesome. But the reading about the Flying Dutchman, they went to Hungary to get their still because it was the exact precise kind of machinery that they wanted to impart their flavors to build their business around. How expensive is it to get all that in with just shipping alone and then putting it all together? Then on top of that, a lot of these distilleries aren't able to sell everything they make right away. You're trying to sell the vodka and the gin or the younger spirits that you can just brew and sell, but most people want to age stuff. So now you've spent all this money on the front end, and then you're going to spend even more, and then you're just going to sit in a warehouse of thousands and thousands of your dollars. And the people who are doing this are not these big pocketed companies. They're starting out just a couple of people who have this delightfully crazy dream.
And can we talk about the impact on food trucks? Because with the distilleries, you know, they have limitations on what they can serve and they can't have kitchens. So many of the distilleries have partnered with food trucks. And so when you go, you see these food trucks lined, you know, around the block where they're located. So that's been good for their business as well.
It's been a nice symbiosis. I started out writing about the food trucks, and it's been so incredible to see just a handful of makers to now there's trucks everywhere and there's every kind of cuisine. How much fun is it to all of a sudden discover, oh, we've got somebody who's making Jamaican hand patties, or there's somebody who's doing their own ramen noodles, or they're pulling in a whole sushi bar and setting up shop.
Yeah.
These food trucks have become a really great kicking off point for these young businesses. And like the distilleries, you can go and discover your new favorite drink, and you can discover your new favorite dish with these constantly rotating food trucks at the different tap rooms.
And you don't want to drink on an empty stomach.
That is a bad idea.
It's a safety thing, too. Add something to your stomach before you...
Yes.
And am I imagining this, but aren't there limousine tours that'll take you, you know, across, you know, regions of the state so you can see several different wineries in one day?
Honestly,
I've seen this before.
Yeah, it's definitely all over the West Coast. So you can certainly do it from California, Washington to Oregon, you name it. Minnesota actually needs a big touring company like that.
There's some small ones, though.
Some little ones.
But because you could end up driving great distances, but you could see several in one day.
Yeah. And, you know, there's so many wineries now that are pocketed in areas. I mean, you could go out west. You could go to Delwood and see Seven Vines. You could go to Stillwater.
Along the St. Croix River.
Right. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So there's a lot of different areas that you can go. And again, it's not just going to go taste, you know, these wines, but, you know, you can take a tour through the vineyard. You can now take tours and tastings through the wineries where they have their hospitality programs really set up to be able to deliver an experience for guests. And I think that's the really fun thing. Everybody wants an experience, just like the caller. She said, I go out every weekend and I do these things because people want to do something different, you know, that's outside of just the downtown metro area. And I think that's fun.
And you can, a lot of people incorporate bike rides.
Yes.
They tour them on their bike. All right. Yeah. Well, Leslie and Joy, you've educated us all quite a bit about the business and about the science of wine and spirits here in Minnesota. And I so appreciate it. My guest, Leslie Miller, certified, I got to say it again, sommelier.
Excellent.
As well as Joy Summers, the editor of Eater Minneapolis. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis MPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.